Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Deborah Gilbert.
And we're honored and happy to have our assemblywoman from the 106th Assembly District, Dee Dee Barrett, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm very happy to be here.
You might have to just adjust your mic a little bit. So you are, in addition to being an assemblywoman, you are also a candidate. So how do you feel like your campaign is going? We got one more week to go.
One more week to go. I'm definitely looking forward to the campaign part being over. I love my job. I love working for the people of the 106th Assembly District. I'm certainly willing and happy to fight for continue representing them. But, you know, I don't love the negativity and, all the bashing that goes on as part of a lot of campaigns. We've stayed away from that. We've run a positive campaign, really just educating our constituents about what I've done and the promises that I've kept to them. As you know, I was elected in March of 2012 in a special election, finished the term of Mark Molinaro, who had then been elected Dutchess County Executive, and then after redistricting, ran in November in the 106th Assembly District, and that's the district that I'm running for a second full term mm-hmm. now.
So you mentioned running a positive campaign. I saw your commercial. I was really taken by it because it's very different than most of the political commercials that are out there.
Great, I'm glad you saw it.
What was your thoughts about running? Why that kind of message?
Well, because that's who I am. I'm a different. I'm not a politician. I think of myself as a public servant. I first ran for office, as I said, just very recently, coming out of, many years, a lifetime as a mother and a wife and a professional journalist and a museum professional and a community activist and, mm-hmm. A long involved life and career that gave me, all contributed to being able to hear and understand what people are saying and listen and communicate and advocate for the people that I care about, which is the people of my district, which are the people of my district. And I think my campaigns are, it's in the end, it's about us as individuals who step forward, and everything that we do in our campaign reflects on us as people. Mm-hmm. It's how we present ourselves. It's how we would govern as elected officials. And I think I need to be proud of all of those pieces. I really feel strongly that it's about being positive. It's what I can and want to do for the district, not bashing somebody else or misrepresenting their record, which the fellow who's running against me seems to feel is the only thing that he knows how to do.
Right.
And your signs, too, they're a beautiful turquoise blue color, and they stand out from the crowd. Was that a conscious decision?
Very much so.
To also say,
yeah,
I'm different?
I'm different, and, this is who I am. I'm a woman, and I'm proud of it. And over and over again, I'm on these panels of candidates, and I'm the only woman standing there. We need more women running. Mm-hmm. But it's, that's who I am. And I think the community has had a chance over these 2.5 years to begin to get to know me and understand how I do my job, and I certainly hope that they like it. I think we've brought back some amazing results in a very short period of time as a freshman legislator. I think this has been pretty remarkable, and it's in large thanks to the great team that I have, and I want to continue to be able to deliver for our district.
I definitely want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you consider successes. But before we move on from where we are, you did this. You did Diner Dialogues, which was basically taking the district office to the people rather than you have a big district.
Right, right.
And I guess the idea was to meet people where they live.
Exactly.
Could you tell us a little bit about your thoughts about starting that?
I'm a huge fan of our diners. I mean, we have these great iconic diners here in the Hudson Valley, and some historic ones, some that are sort of retro style, but they're great and they're so much part of our character, and I've been a fan for a really long time. So actually my blog is called Diner Dialogues, and the Diner Stop Tour is what we initiated when I was first elected, because this is a huge district, 70 miles north and south, 40 miles east and west. And it's very hard. People, have kids, have jobs, have families. It's very hard when they have an issue for them to say, I'm going to stop in at the Hudson or the, Poughkeepsie office of my assembly member. And so this was a, you know, very much my sensibility that you go where the people are, you go to a place where people are comfortable, you support a local business, and this is what we do. We you know, spend a couple of hours at diners all over the district, and, you know, let them know beforehand when we're coming, and invite people to just come in, stop in.
And people can even make appointments, too.
Make appointments. You know, we'll buy them a cup of coffee. We sit in, you know, and chat about whatever issues are, and we've gotten a lot of our constituent issues from that. In addition, of course, we get phone calls and emails from constituents and have really done hundreds and hundreds of, you know, of constituent issue cases where we've been able to, you know, bring some real results for the people of our district. But I love our Diner Stop tours. It's really
how many
it's
diners
so much
have
fun.
You been to?
I think we've been to about we've done at this point probably about 30 or 35 diner stops,
right?
And you know, we've probably been to about 15 or 18.
Right,
in
so a couple, some of them were repeats.
Yeah,
right.
We definitely do repeats. We have some places that are just real central.
Is it a pretty bipartisan thing, or you don't really know who comes?
We
to
don't
these?
Really ask for people's parties. I mean, we've had certainly elected officials, you know, town supervisors, town board members of both parties who've come in to certain of the, you know, of the diner stops. And, you know,
I noticed when I went to one, a prominent Republican farmer from my town came and stayed the whole time. Pretty cagey of him to find out what, you know, issues people were concerned about.
Well, I didn't see it as cagey. I saw it as interested, and we were happy to share with him and hear what his concerns were. Because, you know, part of it, this is a very, as you probably know better than I do, very partisan area. And, you know, we're working hard to break down. I've worked in a very bipartisan way in a lot of the things that we've accomplished. And we're working to break down those notions and those, you know, entrenched ideas, because I represent all the people of my district, not just one party or another.
Mm-hmm. What issues percolated up through those meetings?
Through the diner stops?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a lot of these very specific community issues. For example, we had a couple of town supervisors and town board members who came together to talk about shared services and how we could look at, you know, at helping them, how the state could play a role in that. We've had conversations about, you know, traffic problems or traffic flow, or where there's a need for, you know, some change in signage. Or we had a veteran who came to us about her not getting credit for service that was not during time of war, and we were, you know, able to, we've actually, that bill is, you know, is has been passed to change that. It's, you know, sometimes it's issues where we can go back and say, you know, I think there's a bill on this. We hadn't, you know, paid attention to it. Let's go take another look at it and get involved in those kinds of issues. It's been, you know, we've helped people with medical issues where their insurance company was giving them a hard time. We helped people navigate the Affordable Care Act when that was, you know, that was first on the table. I mean, just it's been a huge, sometimes we laugh in our team that we're, you know, it's like whiplash, because one minute you're dealing with farmers and the next minute you're dealing with, you know, somebody who's in solitary confinement in a prison, and another minute you're dealing with, you know, some an elder abuse, and the next time you're dealing with a traffic, you know, issue. It's so diverse and so across the board. And, you know, I am a full-time legislator. I commit to being a full-time legislator. I don't know how you do this job without being a full-time legislator, especially in a district this big. And really getting to understand and know all the issues, because the issues in the town of Poughkeepsie are not the same as the issues in Copaig.
Right.
And, you know, the issues in Ghent are not the same as the issues in Amenia or Millerton.
Yeah, and you're a real hero in Columbia County for the stand you took and the involvement that you dedicated to the TCI problem when we had that spectacular fire a couple of years ago.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that was sort of a first look at how I operate, and that is, you know, to be there for my constituents and get the answers that they deserve. And, you know, I'm very proud of that meeting that we were able to pull together.
I think had you not stepped forward and organized that meeting that brought in emergency workers from Albany and other parts of the state, we might never have gotten the spotlight on that problem that you enabled.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that recognition. Thank you.
So, one of the big things that you've been focused on as well is the power lines, the monster power lines that were proposed to come through here. You've taken a very strong stand on it. You asked the PSC, the Public Service Commission, to shut it down.
Yeah.
So, and that would seem like another one of these issues where it crosses party lines. I mean, I know a lot of the farmers who are involved in the fight are Republican farmers, I suppose it's a mixed bag. But I mean, it's one of these completely nonpartisan issues. It affects everybody. And is that so? Tell us a little bit about the issue.
Well, yeah, I certainly. You know, I have never had any conversation with anybody around the power lines about what party they're in. This has been really a Hudson Valley issue, and the Hudson Valley, is one of the success stories in the, you know, last 7 to 10 years in the Hudson Valley has been the phenomenal growth in agriculture and tourism and recognition of our amazing resources here, our farms and our view sheds and our arts and cultural organizations and our historic organizations and our outdoor activities. And the idea that we would allow these monster power lines to come slashing through these incredible resources and destroy that economic base that we're just starting to, you know, percolate and grow is, you know, just completely impossible for me to imagine. And you know, when
yeah,
I first
you
start-
say in your blog $4 billion worth of business come from places like Alana,
exactly.
The Opera House,
exactly, and Omega and just coming and looking at farms, all of our farms, you know, the increase in distilleries and wineries and the cheesemakers and the breweries. And I mean, this is really, you know, these are real economic drivers for our region, and this is a big chunk of our future economy here, because it'll allow us not only economic stability and sustainability, but environmental stability and sustainability. And, you know, this is what we need to be supporting and shoring up, not undermining by destroying the view sheds and destroying our farms and having land taken away by eminent domain or any of those threats that have come forward. So, yes, I have called for the PSC to stop this. I mean, the PSC has a very visionary leader in Audrey Zibelman, and she's introduced this, you know, notion of reviewing our energy vision and revising it in a much more 21st century way. And this technology that we've been looking at here for this, you know, energy highway, these monster power lines, is pretty much 19th century, early 20th century
what
technology.
What is the PSC?
The Public Service Commission, PSC. That's the agency that has responsibility for overseeing these authorities, these agencies. So we have an opportunity to be leaders in New York State, to be show how microgrids and more localized energy generation and renewable energy can be the future. And I'm really encouraging them to go in that route and stop. This is something that I think started early on in response to what we're now coming to recognize is not even a real need. And it just, you know, the momentum kept going and the process kept going. And the reason I called on them to halt it is that I think you just need to stop, take a step back and say, review whether there's a need. And if there is, really address what the need is. And it's not going to be met with these monster power lines. That's not the way to do it.
If you're just joining us, this is At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM and WGXE.org. We are with Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett, who represents the 106th Assembly District in Columbia and Dutchess Counties. And coming up at 10:30, around 10:30, we will have a phone call from Green Party candidate for governor Howie Hawkins. So to stay tuned for that. One of the other things that I think you are very proud of is the passage of this of the Lyme disease bill. And so far, the governor has not signed that. Maybe tell us a little bit about the bill, what the bill would do, and then maybe your thoughts on why it isn't. Why it is not law yet?
Well, you know, the issue here is that we in the Hudson Valley know that people who have been struggling for months, years, you know, in some cases,
and that was
decades.
The case for me. So, I mean, it's clear that it's not the case.
There is chronic
Lyme.
There is
chronic Lyme for sure.
But the CDC and some of these other regulatory agencies won't accept that. And therefore, doctors who have prescribed long-term antibiotics or other approaches in order to meet the needs of their patients and working with their patients to figure out what's working for them and what isn't, they're being censured, they're being harassed, they're being prosecuted, they're, you know, lawsuits are being brought against them by these regulatory agencies. And it's outrageous because these are the people that, you know, that are working with our patients. I mean, Lyme is just only continuing to grow. It's not, you know, we're not seeing an abatement in any kind of way.
We're number one, apparently.
Dutchess and Columbia counties, right? Are, you know, this is the epicenter. We are ground zero for this. But it's not just in New York State, and it's not just a national. It's not just in New York State. It's a national issue,
right.
And we really want. Get from anybody that I've asked. And
how long does he have to sign it?
Till the end of the year.
I see. Okay.
So we really encourage anybody who feels strongly about this issue to reach out to him. You know, we did this video. We were calling for him to sign it. Senator Chuck Schumer joined us and called for him to sign it. Anybody who feels passionately about this, please reach out to him and let him know.
So what the bill would do is require insurance companies to cover long-term?
No, that's another bill that's still actually there. All this would do, which is so straightforward, and it's sort of impossible to understand why it is, all it says is basically that doctors can't be censured and prosecuted and harassed for making sound judgments, medical judgments, that may not be the traditional protocol that, you know, these regulatory agencies have decided is the way. So what they're saying, excuse me, let me just finish.
Yeah, absolutely.
What they're saying is that if you haven't been cured with one round of antibiotics, then therefore it's not chronic Lyme, it's not a tick-borne disease. You must be have some psychological issue. It must be some sort of rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, they're basically saying that there's no such thing as chronic Lyme. So therefore, if you're treating something that you identify as chronic Lyme as a doctor, you know, you're doing something wrong.
So they're really limiting a doctor's options
exactly.
in treating their
and
own
is
patients.
Is there any other medical condition where they do that? Of course not.
And is the underlying issue because they're concerned about the overprescription of antibiotics?
I don't know what the underlying issue. I find nothing that that makes any
bizarre.
Sense to
it's
me
very
other
strange.
Than yeah, other than this pressure or you know, or some sense that somewhere along the line they decided it wasn't, it wasn't something that was chronic, and so they're not going back on their position. Mm. I mean, you know, there's a lot of egos we see in a lot of these.
And it seems like with any other condition, I mean, doctors can prescribe off-label. They even if a drug is only supposed to be used for a particular thing, doctors can use any drug they wish in any way they wish. I mean, it seems bizarre that they would just single out Lyme or tick-borne diseases to be.
Some intrepid reporters would really get to the bottom of this, because this is, you know, I think this is really kind of an appalling situation when you see how many people are suffering and for so long. And you have, you know, we went to a Lyme support meeting the other day, and people were talking about kids and how pediatricians are refusing families when one of the kids has been diagnosed with Lyme, because they don't want to go near it, because they're all being, this threat of harassment and prosecution. So to go to a doctor. You know, the doctor says, and you know, any other things I should know? Well, our son was diagnosed with Lyme, you know, last year or whatever. The doctors are refusing to treat.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor won't test me for Lyme disease.
So there you have it. It's the same kind of thing. He doesn't want to, or she doesn't want to know.
He says he doesn't have any confidence in the test.
Well, and that's another issue that these tests are over and over again proving to, you know, not be as accurate and consistent as people thought either. So that's another whole piece of it.
It was the Lyme vaccine, which then they pulled off the market as well. So it seems to be a multiple level problems with Lyme. It's funny.
And we're in the midst of a really bad siege with ticks. I get them every day.
Yeah.
And I don't even do any radical gardening.
And, you know, and your pets carry them. And I mean, it's a real... You know, we are ground zero here in the Hudson Valley, and, you know, we deserve the attention and the recognition of this. So I hope the governor will sign that bill.
So what do you have for the future? What are your plans for, are there any other issues that in particular that you're looking to address? I mean, this is the big ones, of course, like campaign finance reform and that kind of stuff. But what are you looking to do in the next term?
Well, I mean, I definitely, you know, I want to see some real meaningful campaign finance reform. You know, the amount of money that people are forced to spend, you know, across the river in Greene County, I think that Senate race, so it's already topped $3 million. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got congressional races. And we're, you know, we're kind of at the center right now, and this has been one of the challenges with our campaign, is that we've had these two very contentious congressional races, and are, you know, in Dutchess County, a very contentious Senate race, mm-hmm. and the amount of money and the amount of negative mail and the amount of negative advertising has, you know, has been overwhelming. I mean, I think, you know, most people feel like, I just want to hide under the bed and come out on November 5th.
Right.
But we need them to vote, so it's really important that people don't get that discouraged. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have, there's a, you know, a lot of things that I'm looking forward to going back to pursue. We had a, you know, a really terrific bill which has passed the Assembly a couple times that I want to see get passed in the Senate that will help our farmers get their produce to New York City without having to carry the burden of the exorbitant tolls of the thruway, and, you know, that because they're traveling in box trucks, the only place they can travel, the only way they can travel to the big markets, the big appetite in New York City, mm-hmm. is on the thruway, but those tolls are exorbitant, and so this gives them a percentage back in tax credits, and that's something that I want to see pass both houses.
Could be very helpful.
Absolutely, and it's, you know, like I said, we've been pushing it, and we've passed it twice in the Assembly, and we need some, you know, good partners in the Senate to get it through next time. You know, I'm continuing to look at how to get special needs pre-K, which is the only part of the education continuum that the counties are responsible for, get that to be part of the state education department's continual education program, and mm-hmm. that's become an unfunded mandate for our counties, and, you know, can be, that relief of that would, you know, would bring millions of dollars back into the coffers of our county. So that's, you know, that's a bill that we tried to push it through last year in the budget, and we'll continue to do that, but we'll look at, you know, doing that legislatively mm-hmm. now. I mean, you know, I really want to, you know, I've become much more immersed in these energy issues, you know, as a result of what's going on in our my district, and, you know, so many of the towns in my district are impacted by this energy highway. But I really want to see New York State become much more of an energy leader in renewables and in
right.
visionary, and I think we can do that. You know, we don't have to wait and see till everybody else, you know, figures it out and then jump on board afterwards.
Do you think that we need better, higher incentives for renewables? Is that a piece of it?
I think, you know, and you know, I think it was a mistake to disband it. There's no question that the climate and the policies that have dictated the way people operate in Albany and is, you know, is ripe for, you know, for abuse and for leading to corruption. From the moment I was first elected, I had made a decision not to accept any per diems or travel expenses, and it's, you know, I don't want to go there. I think that's, you know, a certain way of leading by example. And, you know, I think that we need to really rethink some of these things because, you know, it's we need people to believe in public service. We need the next generation to step up and be willing to run. We need people who are part of the engaged engaged in civilization and in our communities, and we need to encourage them to vote, and all of those things, and the stuff that's been going on in Albany are, you know, but they really undermine that. They really make people feel like this is, you know, that it's, you know, all self-interest. I mean, it's very frustrating to me when something like that happens, because all of us get you know, brushed with the same mm-hmm. Stroke, and you know, we're not. I mean, I'm, you know, I ran 4 years ago because I really do love this area. I'm passionate about our Hudson Valley, and I want to be sure that, you know, we protect it from the things that will undermine what we love, and that we support the things that we do love and make sure they're the economic engines, and that we create communities that our kids can afford to live in and raise their families here, and mm-hmm. that, you know, that we're, you know, that we're here for the next generation and the next generation, and the things that we love are here for the next generations as well. And that's why I'm running. That's why I'm, you know, running for re-election, and hope that, you know, that people will feel that they have a taste of what I've been able to accomplish in 2 years, and, you know, and will elect me to spend two more years working for them.
Great. We have about a minute or two left. Is there any last thing that we didn't cover? Anything else that you wanted to just have a moment to discuss?
No, just that how important it is for people to vote. And, you know, if people don't, they have no right to complain about anything. And, that, you know, we're privileged here in the United States of America to have this right. And everybody, and, you know, in states across the country, that's being undermined and challenged in really unfortunate ways. And, you know, as a woman, I, you know, look forward to going back and getting the women's equality agenda passed in both houses. I voted for it twice. We've passed it in the assembly twice. But, you know, continuing to support the district and the people of the district, and can only do that if people get out and vote.
Do you have the endorsements of multiple parties?
I have the endorsement of the Democratic Party, the Working Families Party, and the Independence Party.
Good for you.
So three lines that I'm running on.
Great. We want to thank Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett for joining us this morning. You represent the 106th District, so thanks very much for coming in. This is At Issue.
Thank you.
We'll
it's been
see
a
you
pleasure.
Soon. We will be right back. This is At Issue, WGXC 90.7 FM in Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
Assalamu alaikum. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM in Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Tune in, turn on, and jump back. Classic R&B, soul, and funk. Every alternate Tuesday from 12 to 2 on WGXC 90.7 FM.
To be more exact, that's the first and third Tuesday of every month.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Olana Partnership, presenting Frederick Church and Lockwood DeForest at Olana, painting, decorating, and collecting from May 10th to November 1st. Located south of Hudson, Olana is a state historic site. www.olana.org.
The views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
And we're back. This is At Issue on WGXC. I think our phone just rang, so I think that we have Howie Hawkins on the line. That's him, right? Okay. So if you just wait 1 second, we'll patch it in. Mr. Hawkins, are you on the line?
Yes.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We are with Howie Hawkins, who is the Green Party candidate for governor in New York State. So thanks for joining us. We know that you have an appearance here in Hudson today, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Sure. I'll be at Swallow's Cafe or Swallow Coffee on Warren Street at 5 p.m., and it's a meet-and-greet event, so people can come and talk to me, ask me questions, and I'll tell them about our campaign.
Great. So tell us about how is the campaign going. By the way, I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Gilbert.
Welcome, Howard.
So let us know how the campaign is going. What are you feeling like a week out? And maybe for those who aren't familiar with us, you could tell us a little bit about your platform and where you stand.
Okay, well, the campaign is going real well. We are polling at 9% statewide, double digits in most of the upstate congressional districts and state senate districts we've seen polling data for. And that is a all-time record for an independent progressive third-party candidate in New York history. So that's got to mean something. We will probably end up with row C, which would be the third one on the ballot line, and that'll put us into the political discussion going forward on the issues that will come up after the election. Of course, I'm still trying to catch Cuomo, and I'm not conceding the election yet.
Right.
And my platform, we call it the Green New Deal for New York, and we're talking about five basic economic rights that Roosevelt called for at the end of World War II when he called for a second Bill of Rights, an economic Bill of Rights. It's what the Civil Rights Movement reiterated from the March on Washington in 1963 to the Poor People's Campaign in 1968. And those are rights are the right to a useful job, to a living wage, to affordable housing, to health care, and a good education. And we can talk about how we want to implement any one of those. And then the thing that makes it the Green New Deal is we're talking about committing to 100% clean energy over the next 15 years and banning fracking and all new investment in new fossil fuel infrastructure like the pipelines and the mm-hmm. gas storage and salt caverns by Seneca Lake and so forth. And we commit to that clean energy in 15 years. It creates 4.5 million jobs. There's your right to a useful job. And it lowers our electric rates in half. This is from a peer-reviewed study by researchers at Cornell and Stanford. Mm-hmm. So that is the centerpiece of the Green New Deal.
Right. So, this your message does seem to resonate, particularly with upstate people who are very concerned with fracking. And I think it's interesting that you were saying that you were doing you're doing double digits upstate. Why do you think that is? Why are you resonating upstate? I mean, Zephyr Teachout also did very well upstate. What is it about upstate which in general would be considered more conservative than downstate? Why are the progressives popping upstate? What's happening?
Well, I think we have easier access to local media. New York City is really hard to crack. Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of invisible in the city. I think in the teach-out primary, the issue activists, you know, if you're upstate in a conservative Republican town or county, if you're a Democrat, you're probably pretty idealistic. I know a lot of people that would call themselves socialists that have registered Republican in these small towns just so they can be part of the politics. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, those people were concerned with the issues about public corruption, fracking, underfunding of the schools, the high-stakes testing, all the things they're angry about with Andrew Cuomo about, you know, they came out to vote for Zephyr Teachout. I think down in the city, the turnout was the machine.
Right.
You know, the Democratic regulars who have some ties to the machine, and that's who Cuomo was able to rely on in the city. That's why she didn't do as well down there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my case, I think we're getting those same activists coming to us. But down in the city, we're making breakthroughs. I have half a dozen Democratic clubs, starting with the Village Independent Democrats, a pretty famous Democratic club. Mm-hmm. They've never endorsed a third-party candidate before.
Right. They're the ones who launched Ed Koch's career back yeah, several decades ago.
That's right. And I was down there. The district leader, Arthur Schwartz, endorsed me yesterday, mm-hmm. along with an assembly candidate who's running as a progressive, not a Democrat. He's running against
Alex Meadows, right?
Who hasn't had opposition in a couple decades.
Alex Meadows, that guy?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, I think one of the things I have heard a lot of people up here talking about how their interest in building the Green Party stronger and more powerful upstate. So, you know, we only have a week to go. Certainly, I think you're asking for people to vote for you. But as the time goes on after the election, how do people get plugged in order to build a stronger Green Party?
Well, they should get on our list by, you know, filling out one of the forms on our campaign website, HowieHawkins.org. And I have budgeted in my campaign to keep a couple staff people on after the election mm-hmm. so we can go back and help people organize county organizations where they don't exist.
Right.
And then we're going to be organized around issues coming up like single-payer health care. Mm-hmm. That's how we get the right to health care to everybody as well as save ourselves money. And there will be hearings in November and December on the bill that Assemblyman Gottfried and Senator Perkins have sponsored, which has a lot of support. So we'll be following up with activism around issues as well as getting people organized so mm-hmm. that, you know, I like to say the election is just one event, but politics is a process.
Right.
So the more votes we get, the more power we'll have going forward to work on these issues.
Mm-hmm. And so for people who may not understand the process, they the ballot lines are determined at the governor's race. So that's one of the, when you say that you think you believe that you may well get line C, it goes in order of the number of votes that happen in the governor's race. So if more than 50,000 people vote for you, then the Green Party is one of the permanent parties for the next 4 years, and then and the order is depending on the number of votes I think what you're saying is that win or lose, a vote for you helps the Green Party and helps the progressive agenda. Is that correct?
Yes, and particularly if we can reach Row C, then, you know, we're really the third force in New York politics.
Mm-hmm. Is this your first?
Taken for granted.
It's not. And what are some of the other issues that you're working on right now?
Well, we want to end the war on drugs and mass incarceration, and really starting by legalizing, taxing, and regulating marijuana.
Uh-huh.
We have a criminal justice reform platform with about a dozen reforms. I mean, we have such racial disparity in the criminal justice system. For example, blacks, whites, and Latinos use drugs at the same rates, but 94% of the people in the state prisons for nonviolent drug offenses are black or Latino.
Right.
So we've got to address that. In fact, the whole question of racial justice and civil rights, we're the most segregated state in the nation by mm-hmm. both race and income, in both housing and schools.
Right.
So we want a cabinet-level civil rights department to begin, you know, seriously enforcing laws that have not been enforced in this state.
Mm-hmm.
We want a new public housing program that will, instead of the old projects, which were high-rise and concentrated, you know, poor people of color in the ghettos and barrios, we want smaller, humanly scaled, scatter-site, mixed income so that, you know, middle-class people with, you know, social capital, links to jobs, and, you know, most people get a job by knowing somebody. In a way, nepotism is a good thing in the labor market. And, you know, if you're hyper-segregated and isolated, you just don't have access to jobs, employment, or housing.
Right.
So we want mixed income projects in the cities and the suburbs. Try to begin bringing us back together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, on criminal justice, there's a whole bunch of reforms we need, from a statewide public defender system. There was just a court order to do some remedies in my county of Onondaga and five others, but it really needs to be statewide,
mm-hmm.
to ban the box, you know, this box you check off when you apply for housing,
right.
school, or a job, and ask for your criminal history. And
right.
they use that to just screen out people before they even see what's there.
Right.
The ban the box legislation would say you do that after you make a conditional offer of employment or, you know, acceptance to a school or housing.
Do you think that would really give people access to the jobs, or would they just deny them at the next step?
Well, if they've looked at the applicant and found them to be qualified and the person they want, then you look at the criminal history and see if it's relevant to the job.
Right.
So you don't want a child molester doing a daycare job.
Right, right.
But, you know, somebody may have made a mistake younger years, and they paid their dues to society and they've got what the job needs. So this gets them in the door and to be really considered before they're just thrown in the wastebasket, before they've even been looked at.
Right, I see. One of the things I think on the housing front is the lack of focus on home ownership. I mean, there's, you know, nothing breaks the cycle of poverty than home equity. And I think is that a piece of the housing puzzle that, as far as you're concerned?
Yes, and we've had... going back to racial discrimination, massive discrimination in the giving out of mortgages during the housing boom, so that particularly blacks and Latinos that were qualified for prime mortgages got shunted off to subprime, and then when the housing values collapsed in a lot of communities, they ended up losing their homes.
Right.
A big issue for housing affordability for homeowners is property taxes. It also affects tenants. In New York State, half the tenants pay more than 30% of their income for housing, which is the federal standard of affordability, and one-third of the homeowners do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we have the highest in the nation property taxes. So what we want to do is restore the revenue sharing we had in the 1970s, along with the more progressive tax structure we had.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 1970s, we shared 8% of state revenues with local governments. Since that time, it's been reduced down to less than 1%. Which means the state imposes mandates but doesn't pay for them,
right.
and we've got to raise our property taxes, which makes housing unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
And we can restore that revenue sharing by restoring the more progressive tax structure we had back in the 70s. If we did that, 95% of us would get a tax cut, and we would still raise 20% more revenue,
right.
mainly because the top 1% is just made a killing. Back in 1980, they got 10% of all income in the state. Since 2007, they've got upwards of 30%. In other words, their share has tripled, but the top tax bracket was cut in half, and the bottom back tax bracket doubled. So the whole tax burden was shifted onto working people.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, we're with Howie Hawkins, who is the Green Party candidate for governor in New York State. I'll also let our listeners know that we did an interview with Howie a few weeks ago that is available on the WGXC archives. So you can just go to the archive, WGXC.org, click on archive and search for Howie Hawkins, and you'll find that that interview that we did, I think it was September 29th. What's your schedule today? I know that you're really traveling a lot. You're really moving. I think you're in Woodstock at some point today, and you're coming up here. What's a typical day like for you on the campaign trail?
Well, I started this morning at 5:30 in Brooklyn, and fought traffic to get over to the Bronx at this Park Chester subway station where thousands of people going to work, and I was there with Ramon Jimenez, our attorney general candidate. And we handed out flyers and leaflets and cards for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the second radio interview I've done from Ramon's office here in the South Bronx. And then I'm headed upstate. And, first I got to Skype into a Brooklyn station to do an interview at noon. And then I head upstate. And I got to check on my calendar if there's a stop before Hudson. I know after Hudson, I got to be in Schenectady.
Yeah, I think you're in Woodstock. I think you're in Woodstock today as well.
Okay, and then I'll end up in Syracuse tonight.
Maybe I should be keeping your schedule. So we've just got a couple of more minutes, but is there anything else that you you want to let the voters know? I mean, we we'll just repeat that you'll be in Hudson today at 5:00 at Swallow. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you think it important to for our listeners to know about?
Well, I saw just a couple of days ago. Governor Cuomo said on some interview that he wants to end the public, the public monopoly of education, the public schools. And, schooling should be a good basic education, like a sound basic education, what our Constitution, New York State says every student should have. And he wants to set up this market-based system where, you know, they're winners and losers. And that doesn't mean education is a right. And, we're going to end up with, like, my city of Syracuse. We have lost a quarter of our teaching staff in the last 4 years, and half our kids don't graduate high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we got to put the resources in there to help these kids. I mean, that's just basic. The other thing is we got this high-stakes testing linked to Common Core, which, like, I was at this school in Buffalo, Lafayette High School. They speak 42 languages there. You got kids coming from places like Bhutan, in Somalia and the Sudan. They've never even picked up a pencil before when they enter at 7th grade. It's a 7 to 12 school. And the first thing they're learning to do is fill out those bubbles on tests. They fail the Common Core line test because they don't even have the language yet. And then they're told they're failing and they're going to privatize the school as a charter school.
Right.
And then the charters become test prep factories and, you know, they push out the kids that don't test well. And it's just a terrible education policy, and I've found as I've gone around the state that that's the issue that's got the most people upset.
Mm-hmm.
Inner city and rural upstate are upset about the underfunding, and right through the suburbs, even in, you know, most affluent communities on Long Island, people are up in arms about these high-stakes tests and Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to restore curriculum and assessments to the local teachers, parents, and school boards who know their kids the best and care most about their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if Common Core standards, you know, you like them and you want to align your curriculum locally to that, fine. You know, or you want to do something else, that's good too. But it shouldn't be one size fits all from the top down. I think it's really, very disruptive. I've got the endorsement of 6 teacher unions. NYSA statewide staying neutral, but, and they want their locals too. But, you know, from Buffalo Teachers Federation out west to Port Jefferson Station Teachers Association on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 6 local teachers unions have endorsed me
because
they're just really upset with what's been going on in the schools.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have a lot to do today, it sounds like. But Deborah, do you have any last questions?
Well, I just would like to know how your political philosophy developed from the time you were a student at Dartmouth. Were you involved in politics back then? And
I know
you're a member of the Teamsters Union. And
I'm a working teacher. I've worked in construction. I did go to Dartmouth College. I also served in the Marine Corps. But I got my politics in 1964. I'm age 12. And growing up in a multiracial community and family, I couldn't help but deal with civil rights in the 60s. And that year, the Republicans were campaigning against fair housing and got the law repealed with Ronald Reagan leading the charge. And the Democrats sat the Dixiecrats, not the Freedom Democrats. So I, by August 1964, at age 12, said, where's my party? And basically thought, we need a party that will speak up for the people's rights. And then Johnson won in a landslide and escalated in Vietnam. And, you know, that made, so I got involved with the Peace and Freedom Party a few years later. Even though I couldn't vote, I was urging people to register into that party. You know, peace in Vietnam, freedom was a civil rights slogan. And that's how I got started. And I'm basically fighting for the same things we were fighting for back then.
Mm-hmm.
Basic economic human rights, peace, and the environment.
It's sad that we're still fighting the same fight, isn't it?
Well, I've been involved in a lot of movements that started out small and exploded.
Right.
And I think in the electoral arena, people have about had enough, so maybe that's the next upsurge.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, and I know I'll be at the at Swallow later to see you and meet you, and we're very happy that you would take the time and speak with our listeners and with us this afternoon. So we'll see you over at Swallow at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Thanks for joining us here on At Issue. We'll be right back. Thanks very much, Howie.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
We'll talk
Thank
to you,
you.
Later. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM. We will be right back. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be finishing off the show.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA. Don't let the frackin' frackers frack you, bro.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Columbia Economic Development Corporation, working to strengthen the Columbia County tax base through support of local business, job creation, and promoting Columbia County as a place to live and work. For more information, visit columbiaedc.com.
SNAP is the new name for the food stamp program in New York. To find out if you may be eligible for assistance in applying for SNAP, call Catholic Charities of Columbia and Greene Counties Nutrition Outreach and Education Program. In Columbia County, call 828-8660. If you are found eligible for SNAP, you may also be eligible for HEAP benefits. This institution is an equal opportunity provider, prepared by a project of Hunger Solutions New York, USDA/FNS and NYSOTDA.
The views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
So we're back. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM. This past Sunday, there was a campaign rally down at Basilica Hudson. Sean Eldridge, who's the Democratic candidate for Congress, and Dee Dee Barrett, who we spoke with earlier, and Brian Howard were there. Brian Howard is the Democratic candidate for New York State Senate. His opponent is Kathy Marchione, the incumbent. I did a brief interview with him just after the rally. One of the things I just wanted to set this up. So one of the more interesting portions of the of Brian's stump speech was that he clearly got extremely choked up when he was talking about his daughters, and the topic was the women's equality agenda, and he was talking about his daughters and his relationship with abortion rights and women's health care and that kind of thing. He got very choked up and even had to stop for a second. So this I just asked him a couple of questions after the rally, and one was on that that particular issue. So we're going to play this little interview, and then we'll be right back at the end to say goodbye. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM.
With Democrats for finding...
Oops. Little trouble. Hold on one second. Well, I think we may not be able to play that. Maybe we could talk a little bit about the propositions. I guess we'll finish it off on that. We had a lot that we wanted to fit into this show, and it just is what it is. We have about 5 minutes left, but there are three propositions on the ballot, and people may not be incredibly focused on those at this point. Propositions in general are the least voted things on any ballot.
You always forget to vote for them and then are kicking yourself afterwards.
Right. They're on the other side of the ballot too. So when you go to vote, they're on the one side, they're the people who you're going to vote for, and on the opposite side are the propositions. So there are three propositions on the ballot this year. One, the proposition one, of course, there are more in some places. Some places have library props and everything, but statewide, there are three propositions this year, and the proposition one would add a new mechanism for redistricting when districts every 10 years election districts have to be redrawn in order to equalize the population. That is, except in Hudson, apparently. But maybe do you have the prop right there?
I have Perry Teasdale's editorial. I don't have the prop itself,
right.
but he points out that some states have truly independent commissions that adjust the boundaries of election districts
right.
every 10 years. But apparently this is not the proposition.
Right. And in this case, the people took this proposition to court, and the one thing that the judge let it go on the ballot, but the one thing he made them do is remove the word independent from it, because in the end there would be a quasi independent group that would draw the districts, but in the end the legislature would have veto power over it, so therefore it simply isn't independent. So common cause.
It just keeps up the stack deck that is our state political system.
And it also and it would codify it in our New York State Constitution. So the redistricting process won't happen again until 2022. So there's no rush to do this. So many good government groups and others have recommended a no vote on Proposition 1, although the governor supports it, and I think some legislators support it, but ultimately that would be no big surprise if they have ultimate veto power over the district line. So
we just had a redistricting a couple years ago, and it seemed to be as partisan as the usual redistricting,
right.
and that's what the term gerrymandering is all about.
Right. And that was after the governor vowed to veto any political redistricting, and then signed it anyway. Proposition two is about would allow legislators to receive bills and any correspondence by electronic means rather than having to have them printed, which is a no-brainer. Obviously, these bills that are hundreds and hundreds of pages long, which are rarely read in the first place, are required to be printed and have every legislator have a copy of it. And, of course, most people nowadays read on electronic readers or their phones or at their computers, and it would save the state many dollars. So
not to mention saving forests,
right.
and alleviating the need for storage space going forward.
Exactly. 'Cause
think of all the records that must be stored in some
right
in numerous
on
places.
Paper.
Yeah.
So it seems that a yes vote on Prop 2 is a no brainer in most cases. The third proposition is what's being called the Smart Schools Act or the Smart Schools Bond, and it would allow the state to borrow $2 billion. With a B, and which would then be used for school infrastructure, universal broadband, and technology. There are some groups which are supporting the Safe Schools. I mean, not Safe Schools, Smart Schools bond, but others are concerned that borrowing to buy technology, which becomes obsolete very quickly and basically would be obsolete within, at best, 5 years.
And many schools are already devoting big chunks of their right. annual budget to technical upgrades.
Right. So the interest alone on this bond would be $100 million a year. So many people believe that if you want to buy technology like this, then it should be budgeted for instead of borrowed for. Others feel differently and think that any technology that gets to the schools is a good thing. So
the most disturbing thing is no one's done the math. I don't know personally how it, you know, passage of this bond will affect my financial picture in years to come.
So that's,
nobody else does either.
So that's it. We're gonna have to wrap it up.